You can be confident and not take any action. Boldness is taking action. And so I started to decode how this worked and how I made myself bolder. And I was talking to a class of high school students, and I was teaching them my life lessons so far. And this was 15 years ago now. And one of the things I said is boldness is a superpower, and the younger you learn it, the better.
You are listening to Fingerprints on Success, the podcast dedicated to highlighting unique imprints left by business leaders, mentors, and successful entrepreneurs. In this show, we'll be bringing on a diverse range of serial entrepreneurs, professionals, leaders, and coaches to uncover the secrets behind achieving success both professionally and personally. Guiding you on this podcast is none other than Bill Barrett, an award-winning corporate and business law attorney and CEO of the law firm Mandelbaum Barrett PC, where he and his team have provided a full array of legal services to both businesses and individuals throughout the country. Get ready and let's get to the show.
Hey everyone, it's Bill Barrett, and today's guest is Fred Joyle, who's an author, speaker, and entrepreneur. Fred is the co-founder of the most successful dentist referral service in the country, the iconic brand 1-800-DENTIST. He's previously written two best-selling books on marketing for the dental industry, which he then followed with his latest book, Super Bold, From Underconfident to Charismatic in 90 Days, which is now a Wall Street Journal bestseller. Fred's humble brags are that he once beat Sir Richard Branson in a game of chess, and he'll talk about it during the interview. And he was also a question on Jeopardy. He's an avid cyclist, a below-average tennis player, and even a worse golfer, according to him. But I can tell you, a world-class entrepreneur. So now let's unravel the fingerprints on success of Fred Joyle. Fred Joyle, welcome to Fingerprints on Success. How are you doing today?
Bill, I'm doing great. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
As am I. So where I would love to just start off, and maybe this is where everybody starts off with you, perhaps, is to tell us a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey that led to the founding of 1-800-DENTIST, which, of course, is an iconic brand that you develop. And I think it would be great just for people who don't know the story for you to tell the story of kind of how it came about.
All right. Well, I can give you, you know, the interesting twists and turns that led to it. As I moved to California to work for this entrepreneur, and this was in the late 70s, early 80s, and he was like the laziest entrepreneur ever. Working for him was like a reverse MBA.
Which is, by the way, weird for entrepreneurs who tend to be like workaholics in their craft. So that's kind of unusual.
Yeah, this guy was exhausted by noon every day. It's like, yeah, the opposite of the 80-hour a week entrepreneur. But I learned a lot by example. It's like, don't do any of the things that he did. And he had this one moment of brilliance that he, when 800 numbers first came out, he grabbed the digits for dentists. So he had 800 dentists, and he had it ringing to his house for years. Now, his startup failed that I was working with him on, and which was unrelated to 800 dentists as a phone number. And I found my way into the advertising business in Los Angeles because that was what I really wanted to do. That was the first job I ever had that I said, oh, I have found something that I can do happily as a career. And so I was a junior copywriter, then a copywriter. And then about the time I was starting to get anxious about the career arc in advertising, because I was watching these guys in their 50s get laid off. And at the time, they'd be making, you know, $250,000 a year in the 80s, which was fabulous. They'd get laid off and couldn't get another job. because somebody decided they had aged out of the advertising world. And so basically your career falls off a cliff in advertising. And I said, wow, I don't want to have that happen to me. And so I started freelancing as a creative director. And then the entrepreneur said, hey, I think you could turn 800 dentists into a business. And I said, well, I'm not going to work with you because you don't work. Anyway, I understand. I'll license you the phone number. And so I was young and naive enough to and could live on nothing, you know, all the requirements of an entrepreneur, and except the expertise. And another good friend of mine who was a stockbroker wanted to leave that because he was finding it was stealing his soul. He said, let's do this together. So we got a license to use the phone number in Los Angeles. And so we beat the streets. We went finding dentists. We spent 6 months and we finally found 20 dentists who would go along with this crazy idea that they would pay us. We would run radio spots and then have a little call center and distribute the leads to them. And so I wrote the radio spots, wrote and produced the radio spots. And my partner and I just, we eventually got enough doctors on to justify launching, got a 200 square foot office, with 5 phone lines. And we got 50 phone calls on the first day that we started running radio. And there was that, it was like a holy shit moment. Like, wow. This might actually work. What we were telling the doctors might actually be true. That, you know, and so we just kept adding doctors and adding money and adding cities. And we got massively in debt in terms of media, because they eventually gave us credit. So it was one of those things where you get so deep in that you have to make it work. Because that's what people quit, because when it's easy to quit, because it gets hard, it gets, and you have no idea if it's going to work. We had no idea if it was going to be profitable until we were like 2.5 years in. And that was when we switched to running television ads instead of radio ads.
I was going to ask like how that transition came about, because it started with the radio ads and then TV, and that's and you were in some of the commercials, right?
Well, I was in about half of them eventually. But, you know, there's a story that, because you and I talk about these things like, you know, be curious about what people do and just sort of put this message out there of what you're looking for. So I'm on a flight coming back from New York and I run into this woman that I used to work with at the ad agency. We're actually sitting next to each other. And I said, what are you doing now? And she says, oh, I'm an agent for cinematographer. And I said, you know what? I'm looking for some young guys who just came out of film school, who are looking to get something on their reel, who are willing to make a TV commercial for me for practically nothing. And she said, I know exactly who that is. Those guys. It was actually a husband and wife and another guy. They made my commercials for the next 10 years. But the first commercial was an absolute home run. We ran it for a year. And it just, the business tripled in 90 days. And then it just kept growing. Then we went to New York. We went to Chicago. We started adding all of the big cities. That's when it really took off. And we got into that third year and we said, wow, we could actually pay ourselves decently. And, you know, our income tripled from the first really good paycheck to the next year's paycheck. And, you know, it was just an amazing experience to say, wow, I'm actually making more money than I need for the first time in my life. Of course, I couldn't live on that now. But, you know, back then it was, it moved so fast. It was great. And we just kept refining that brand, adding doctors, you know, and we ran a business like we wanted a business to be. We had basic, before we had culture as a byword in business, we created a culture. We wanted a place where we wanted to go to work every day. And the magic of it that we had no plan for is that was projected over the phone when people would call looking for a dentist. Because people have the number one thing we learned that we, again, didn't know, what problem are you solving in your business? People have as much anxiety about choosing a dentist as they do about going. And once we learned that, we went, oh, that's what why this call center works so well. And we always had a really comfortable, fun call center because they projected something friendly and positive and caring over the phone. And that was the difference between success and failure, because we got a lot more people going to the dentist. Because
at its peak, how many clients did you have, and how much revenue when you took it from zero, from an idea, and how far did you take it?
So the other thing is, we raised $30,000 of money from our families. That was our startup capital. At its peak, we were doing 10,000 phone calls a day coming into the call center. We had just around 4,000 clients, and we were doing $45 million a year in revenue. And it leveled off right around there. We there was only so much demand and so many dentists who needed us. But it stayed at that level for many years. And eventually, Google disintermediated the business model. You know, we watched it go on steady decline, and I sold it about 8 years ago.
So we'll get into some of the things that you're up to now and talk about that. But before we do, and thanks for sharing the story, the journey of how you created and built from scratch 1-800-DENTIST into an iconic brand and something that was well known throughout the country. And when you reflect on that journey and that success, do you think there were certain kind of guiding principles or philosophies that you deployed that when you reflect back and look at it, they were difference makers, where you say, you know, it was because of that mindset or that philosophy that we were able to do this?
Yeah, I mean, we had three things that we wanted. As like I said, we wanted a great place to go to work every day. And we wanted a business where everybody won, whether it was the client, which was the dentist, the other client, which was the patient looking for a dentist, our employees and us. And so those guided us. And then we developed more core values beyond that. Integrity trumping profits, for example. Is like, we just would say, look, we're not going to sacrifice what we know is the right thing just because money presents itself. And people were always doing things like that. They were saying, oh, you could save money doing this. You could cut corners doing this. Have you thought about giving the doctors just a little bit less every month and still charging them the same? Yeah, we've thought about it, but that's not what they signed on for. There was a very powerful environment that we had, you know, and I reflect now, and I said some of these principles developed over time. Some of them are funny, which was like the squeaky wheel gets replaced, which is if a client is just a pain in the ass and they're trying to game the system by saying, oh, I didn't get enough referrals this month. And we eventually had to create systems to check to see if they actually got those referrals and were just, they were bored that they had a free hour, so they'd come and try to chisel us. But they also, our employees also knew that nobody could come get on the phone and start cursing them out, chewing them out, getting angry and mean and aggressive on the phone. We just kick them out. We just, we'd say, and when you protect your employees like that, they will go to the wall for you. Because the customer isn't always right for you. It is not always the right customer for you. A good customer, you're going to find a way to try to make them right. But there are people that you need to fire customer to have a great business.
Yeah, I often tell younger lawyers in my firm that are trying to build their businesses, and when they're dealing with a really difficult client who, you know, similar to what you described, you know, they're, you know, sometimes you've run into an abusive client, I'll say to them, hey, you know, sometimes the very best engagement is the one you did not take. Because, you know, that not every customer is a great customer. And then there's a concept of upgrading your customers over time too, which is interesting. But yeah, you know, it's funny, you were in a way like culture, which is now a buzzword, right? And guide, and your core values, which is another kind of like current like corporate buzzword, you know, you guys were doing it and implementing it and building it when it wasn't, you know, a household name or description. And it obviously made a huge impact. Because I know you and I have talked, your retention rate of the people who worked for you was pretty remarkable too.
We had double the average retention rate of a call center. And we had a philosophy of growing people, because, and you can do that when you get a business that's growing fast. The hardest thing is finding great employee. That's what slows you down. And so we were, always looking to our own team members to see if they were ready to become a salesperson or a customer service person, or we could move them into marketing. We had two floors. We had a call center on one floor, and we had all the other departments on another floor. And so the floor with the sales and marketing and customer service, there were stickers on people's doors that said, I started in the call center. And that was very inspiring to the people in the call center, because they went, there's a ladder up here. And, you know, my last day at work, every month we celebrated employees' anniversaries and birthdays, and my last day we celebrated 3 25-year employees in the same month. They had all hit it in the same month, and that was one of the proudest days I ever had at work, because these people had given me their entire adult lives. And they were the ones defending the culture. I didn't have to do it. It was more important to them than it was to me. And that's the mark of a real culture, is when the team, when it's happening, when you're not there, just as much as when you're there.
Yeah, because that's actually culture, right? That's just kind of the identity or the DNA of the organization at that point. On the flip side, you know, if Fred Joyle today could be advising Fred Joyle from, you know, years ago, what are some of the kind of pitfalls or mistakes or kind of things that, you know, going back, you would do differently that you would advise yourself to watch out for or to not do?
So in making a great place to work, we didn't think about the other side of it, which was to be really clear on what you expected as the owner, as the CEO, in return. Because if you're not super clear about that, then people do what they feel like doing or what they think you want them to do, rather than what you actually want them to do. So I would be much more clear about, like, I expect you to really produce, really perform, to stay here. Because there was a lot of people that got really comfortable, and I wasn't going around saying, "Are we gonna kick some ass here or not? Are we just gonna cruise through the next year?" And so that was all my brother and I. My brother was the COO. We reflected on it and said, yeah, we were really lax on spelling out what we expected from people until much later in the business. And so I'd be telling Fred that. And I would also say, stay in your damn lane. Because what we did is we tried chiropractors, we tried auto mechanics, we tried plastic surgeons, we tried lawyers. And every one of them, the formula didn't work on. And we vaporized millions of dollars trying to do that instead of getting even better at what we did. And, you know, the list goes on of things I didn't do. But
with that, just stay on that for a second, because obviously you tried to scale this model into other professions, as you just said, and that turned out not to be a good choice. Do you think, were there fundamental differences in the profession or people or were business models that you think, you know, lent itself to that issue or that problem?
We sort of decoded the formula afterwards, but the formula is what is the long-term value of a customer to that client, whether it's a lawyer or a plastic surgeon, and what does it cost to get and process that potential patient, customer, client in and into the business. End to end. So run the advertising, do the call handling, make the transfer, run the business around it, and eke out 15% profit. And you know, the perfect example is chiropractic. Is the average chiropractic visit is, even with insurance, is about 8 visits at $100-$150.
Right. The average experience basically starts ends after that many visits.
Less than a grand, and it was costing between $500 and $600 a referral in advertising, just in the hard advertising costs to get those. So it's not going to work. That, you know, that whole we leveraged broadcast television, which a dentist couldn't do in any urban area. They could do it in a little suburban town. They could buy local TV if they had enough money, but the average dentist in the average city could never do TV advertising, and they didn't answer the phone 24 hours a day like we did. So we had all of these components that worked perfectly for dentists, because the long-term value of a dental patient is $5,000 or $10,000. So if it costs them $300 or $400 to get a potential patient for me, that all day long. A smart dentist would say, I'll take 10,000 of those a month.
Sure.
So
interesting. Stay in your lane is the advice. Yeah.
And the other thing was, in another twist, when we did plastic surgeon, the only plastic surgeons who were interested in using us and would have paid us anything for a patient were the guys who sucked at it. Because the guys who were good at it, all they needed was word of mouth, because their work is their billboard. It's out there. It's fake breasts. It's you know, nose jobs and everything else. It's their ads are everywhere. And people are saying, who's your surgeon?
Yeah.
And so we went, we don't want to be finding patients for these guys, the guys that wanted to pay it.
Interesting. That is very interesting too, to see like where it would seem so logical to me. I think I would probably make that same mistake, right? That if it worked there, it would work elsewhere. But then as you said, as you kind of like reverse engineer it afterward, you realize there were a lot of differences. But let me shift gears on you to people. You know, the show is Fingerprints on Success, and we always love to make sure that when we talk to our entrepreneurs, our guests that come on the program, that we ask them the question about mentors along the way. At what point in life or some point in life, usually most successful people will point to a person or persons where when they reflect, they'll say, you know, if it wasn't for that person, I'm not so sure I would have realized this kind of success. I might not have built a multi-million dollar company had it not been for the way this person influenced my life. Is there someone or someone that you could share a story with us about anyone?
Well, there's the first real mentor that I had. And a lot of times a mentor is not somebody in an ongoing basis. They just say what you need to know right now. And it was a guy who ran an ad agency, and a good friend of mine was a storyboard artist, and he brought me into the ad agency with him for lunch. And that was when I got the vibe. I walked in and I went, oh my God, I want a job at a place like this. So he introduced me to the general manager, who was also kind of a friend of his beyond just somebody who was hiring him. And I said, I'll do anything to get a job here. He said, well, I'm not going to give you a job because you don't know how to write advertising. And I was like, yeah, but I got a degree in creative writing and from college and French, which didn't help at all. That was like too many. And he said, there's a night school being taught in LA, taught by creative directors, working creative directors. Go to that, sign up for that immediately and go to that for 6 months and learn how to write advertising. And then you'll get a job anywhere. And that was two things. One, it got me into advertising because I did learn how to write ads, which paid off for 800 Dentists because I wrote the ad. I didn't have to hire somebody to write the ads. I was writing them. I was saving a fortune in you know, that creative side and the production side. But it was the process of lifelong learning starting then. It's like, I am not done school. I tried to tell him I knew how to write, and he told me I didn't, and he was correct. But so my life is still about, what am I reading? What am I watching? What podcast am I listening to? What mentors am I seeking out? What professionals am I asking for guidance and insight and critique? That began that process because I said, there are people that can tell you what you need to know, what you're missing, and where to go and get it. And that everything hinged on that one conversation, all my success.
Constant and never ending improvement, right?
Yeah, that's it. Lifelong learning. And that's for us. That's for you and me, Bill, for younger people. It's lifelong learning because you got to unlearn half the stuff you learned in college, if not all of it nowadays. Because
don't tell me that. I'm in the midst of paying tuition for my first one to go to college. I'm expecting serious value out of this.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure it'll pay off.
Enjoying the show so far? We've received fantastic feedback since we started, and we love your questions. Entrepreneurs face unique challenges, and as a corporate attorney and CEO, Bill understands that. Whether it's your first location, industry regulations, succession plans, or exit strategies for your business, the journey is rarely a smooth one. Mandelbaum Barrett PC offers listeners of this podcast a 20-minute consultation with their award-winning team. From mergers and acquisitions to litigation, they help entrepreneurs navigate new opportunities, get invaluable insights, and support to not just survive, but thrive. Click the link in the episode description or visit mblawfirm.com for details. Once again, it's mblawfirm.com. Now, back to our show.
Well, so let me shift to another topic. In terms of current events, we'll call it, hot topic right now, or something that you're either navigating or you think that people out there, entrepreneurs or in general, should be thinking about right now that you think is kind of front of mind?
You know, there's two major things that are happening or coming. And obviously people are talking a lot about AI, but AI it's not even in, you know, its first phase. It's in like almost in the pre-phase. It's in the the playground phase of it, you need to understand how this is working and how it will impact the future. It is already transforming the advertising world. There are people who are producing videos and TV commercials for a fraction of the cost, just using the writing tools, the editing tools, the video production tools that already exist. And they are in their infancy in their capability, but it's moving so fast that this train is roaring out of the station. So if you're not finding a way to at least dabble in it, start using ChatGPT to write yourself email headlines, or just rewrite the last thing that you were going to write, you know, do a blog post, have it write a blog post for you and experience the wonder of what it can create now, because it's like saying, oh, well, the iPod is the biggest invention Apple's ever going to have. No, that was the warm-up act for the smartphone, which was a computer in your hands. But it had all your music in it too. But we all got interested because we had iPods that had all our music in them. This is and not all our music. Remember, you had like 1,000 songs the first time around, right? But that's happening, and quantum computing is coming online, and that the speed of that, its ability to learn and calculate at 100 times what we have now, conservatively, that those two things are going to transform the next decade and the rest of our life. And it's going to affect medicine. It's going to affect transportation. It's going to affect climate. It's going to affect energy. And it's going to affect education. Because look at education now. I mean, you and I had to actually use books. That seems idiotic to people, you know, who say, well, I can just ask my phone for this information or do this calculation. I mean, the younger generation can't calculate a tip because there's like the phone does that sort of stuff for them. There's young people who can't read an analog clock because they're used to everything being digital in their life. These are the changes. The changes are coming at such an accelerated pace that you're going to have to be stepping up your learning game and don't say if you're saying I'm too old for this, you need to slap yourself, look in the mirror and give yourself a good slap, because it will affect your life. It will affect your career. It will affect your ability to earn. And just if it seems totally irrelevant to you, learn about it anyway. The you know, one of the great life lessons that I picked up is on a regular basis, learn about something that has nothing to do with your job or your career. Just something totally unrelated, irrelevant, because a lot of times you go, that's an interesting way of doing that. That totally applies to my business. So dip into this stuff quickly and find somebody, find a young person who can talk you through it.
Well, that's always my crutch, right? I go to the people that are already using it to try to learn. It's my shortcut. Fred, tell us, I mean, you have a Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Super Bold, From Underconfident to Charismatic in 90 Days. In fact, there's a copy of it right behind you on the shelf, on the video here. Tell the audience and our entrepreneurs a little bit about that book and, you know, give us a sense of, I mean, obviously it's taken off incredibly well, and I'd love for you to share a little bit about what, you know, why you wrote it and kind of how it came about.
Well, I grew up as a very shy person, and missed a lot of opportunities and a lot of relationships and a lot of adventure, and just hid in my comfort zone, But I saw bold people behaving and achieving things and trying things. And I would just say, why are they this way? Are they born this way? Why does nothing stop them? Because I'm stopping me like crazy. And that's what I really figured out, is it was me stopping me, which is one of the lessons in the book. And I just started to emulate them, even though it made me very uncomfortable. And what happened is I kept increasing my boldness, and life kept getting better. New unexpected things were happening, positive things, results I couldn't even imagine, but also just great things. I was dating really fun, interesting women. I was meeting interesting people. I was going to strange places and eating strange food. The list just went on and on. And I just eventually realized that boldness is a superpower. And it's not just confident, because you can be confident and not take any action. Boldness is taking action. And so I started to decode how this worked and how I made myself bolder. And I was talking to a class of high school students, and I was teaching them my life lessons so far. And this was 15 years ago now. And one of the things I said is boldness is a superpower, and the younger you learn it, the better. And they said, "That's great. How? How do I get over the fact that I care about what everybody thinks? How do I overcome my shyness, my introversion, my fear of embarrassment, my fear of ridicule, my fear of failure?" And so I said, I got to figure out how I did it and write it down, create a method where somebody can do it much faster. And so that's what super boldness is about, is being able to harness your boldness and build your boldness muscle on an ongoing basis, so that you are bold when it matters most. Because there will be moments in your life where you will need to step up. You will need to say, "I'm going for it." It may be asking that person out. It may be asking for a raise. It may be quitting your job and starting a business. It may be leaving a crappy marriage. It could be any of those things where you have to be bold. It could be saying, "Look, in order to get good at my career, in order to take my career to the next level, I got to start a podcast." And that's what Bill Barrett decides to do, and decides, I got to get good at this. This is going to be good for me personally. It's going to be good for the business, and I'm going to be uncomfortable till I'm comfortable. And so I created a method called the Pride Method in the book, which is a 5-step process of building your boldness muscle on a steady, manageable basis, but happens very quickly because the feedback loop becomes so positive so fast. You say, "Wow." Because a lot of people have moments of boldness that happened in their life, but they can't replicate them. They just summoned it in that moment and they went, "Wow, I actually stepped way out of my comfort zone and got that job, got that raise, met that guy, met that girl." Whatever it was. And then you start to develop what are boldness life skills, which is embracing failure, and never being the one to stop yourself, and not worrying about what other people think, and just taking action. And it's not about being a show off. It's not about drawing attention to yourself. It's about never being the one to stop you from chasing your dream. Because life is short, baby. The clock runs out, and it's too short to let somebody else decide what you're capable of. It's too short to think you're going to get to your dreams next year or next month.
Well, having read the book, I recommend it to all of our listeners and our entrepreneurs out there. It's a great book, and obviously, as I mentioned before, a Wall Street Journal bestseller. It's interesting too. I you made me think while you were describing it about a client of mine who had a really, I'll say it, an excellent job as kind of a high level person in an existing business. Wasn't his business, but it was an existing business in New York City, and was doing very, very well. but it wasn't fulfilling, and came to me with this idea, and he's going to be a future guest on the program. And he came to me and said, yeah, you know, check out this business plan. I'm going to open up a distillery. And I said to myself, is he nuts? Is like, and oh, and what are you going to make? Oh, I'm going to make gin. So I'm thinking, like, do you know how to make gin? Like,
do you know how many gins there already are?
Yeah. Well, you know, fast forward, like, he took this bold leap, quit his job, literally had a still built, and found a commercial space, and had his whole business plan to make this artisanal product at a time when that was becoming like a very hot thing in a lot of different segments. And, you know, fast forward, has built an unbelievably successful, nationally distributed, multiple products. He was super bold. That was a big step. It would have been very easy just continue to make a lot of money and do well and not have to take that risk. But he took it.
You know, another decade goes by and you don't have the willpower and you don't have the energy. And it's you think, oh, well, it's too late to get to it. First of all, it's never too late to get to get to your dream. You know, it's the old Chinese proverb, the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. Second best time is today. And so get to your dreams now. And that's what he did. He stepped in and he kind of, he burned the boats in the harbor there. I call it letting the door lock behind you, because that's kind of what we did in 800 Dennis. Is we had so much debt with media that, and you know, and when you're young in business, you sign personally on everything. So we were on the lease and every other thing that we had signed personally for. So we would have had to both go personally bankrupt if the business failed. So we had to figure it out.
Right. No option. Failure was not an option.
Yeah. The door behind us was locked. So it's like, okay, it's only this way.
So I got a couple more questions for you, and I want to respect your time. The first one of those is, what has Fred Joyle excited these days? When you jump out of bed in the morning, you know, what do you have going on that's got you pumped up that you're excited about?
I am, obviously, you can hear how passionate I am about the impact boldness has on people. And I have people who have come to me doing lectures, keynotes on Super Bold, and then subsequently read the book, and they like text me. And they'll text me pictures of like, I walked up to this guy and just started talking to him. And the next thing you know, he and I are going to do this project together, you know, with collectible cars, whatever the heck, you know, it's like, you know, people just keep coming up to me saying, this book hit me just when I needed it. I decided that, just like your friend, that I liked my job, but I was not fulfilled in my job. But what I really wanted to do was this. And as soon as I read your book, I said, I gotta start now. And they just didn't understand that anybody could be bold, that boldness is not something genetic. It is a life skill that you can develop. Some people developed it really early. Most of us had it programmed out of us. And so I love to get in front of people and just put this message out there, because I know it's going to change the trajectory of their life and that they'll get to it so much faster. You know, I love high school audiences and college audiences, because man, do I wish I knew this stuff then.
That's awesome. So on that, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, Fred, to, you know, in terms of, you know, I know that you do programs, speaking engagements, and, you know, major seminars, that you've done them for huge organizations, corporate America and private institutions. What's the best way for our listeners and entrepreneurs out there to get a hold of you if they want to try to reach you?
FredJoyle.com is my website. And right there on the website, you can schedule a half hour conversation with me. We can talk about, you know, what impact I could have on your organization. And it could be a sales organization, could be a law firm. I spoke to your firm and that was a lot of fun. And also, you know, I think it had a lot of impact on your people. I mean, we all need to step up our game. And a lot of people just don't know how. They just say, well, like, what's the first step here to being bolder? And I have exercises in the book that just start you very simply, but you just say, wow, that was a lot easier than I thought. And I'm feeling my comfort zone expanding because I'm making them do stuff that's uncomfortable, but the stakes are really low. Like, you know, if you see a door that says employees only, go in. Nothing bad will happen. Right. And it's like, but listen to the voice in your head going, oh my God, somebody's going to say, they're going to throw me out. They're going to beat me to death. Whatever the heck we have this amazing ability to calculate the worst case scenario and a terrible ability to calculate the odds of it happening. That's human nature. And so doing those things, you just go, wow, nobody stopped me. And when you realize how often and how I was trying to stop me, and it's like a harmless thing, but it's a experiential thing that says, try stuff. It doesn't have to go right. It's, you know, the transformation happens when you start saying, I would rather try it and fail it at it than never try it. I would rather fail at it than never try it, because not trying it is what gnaws at you. And what happens is people stack a lifetime of regrets with those things they should have done, they should have said, they should have tried back then. And now it's too late.
Yeah. Like you said, it life's short and you got to go after your dreams. And the entrepreneurs that are our listeners, you know, some are well established and have taken those risks and those leaps, and others are, you know, aspiring and, you know, figuring it all out. So I think it's great advice and it's a great book. So Fred, we'll finish on this last one. You know, you've done a lot. You've accomplished a lot. You continue to accomplish a lot. You've written books. I didn't ask you a question that I really wanted to ask you, which is, how did you end up playing chess against Sir Richard Branson, and did you win?
Well, so he owns a couple of islands in the Virgin Islands, and he rents one of them out, Necker Island, to business people. So I was down there with a group of business people, and sometimes he's hanging around the island and sometimes he's not. Depends if his wife is around. If his wife's around, he hangs out on the other island that he owns, or he's somewhere else in the world doing stuff. So I was there and I was playing tennis on the first day and ruptured my Achilles tendon. And I talked to a surgeon and he said, well, you might as well stay there for the rest of your 5 days because it's not going to heal. I'll fix it when you get back. Don't worry about it. Just so I was just sitting there watching other people play tennis, and Richard came up to me because he had heard about this. And he says that I had hurt myself. And he's okay. So let me back up and say, every once in a while, you get to meet the person you admire most in the world as a business person. And that's Richard Branson for me. There is nobody I admire more than him, what he's accomplished and how he's accomplished it and how he moves through life. There isn't a day that goes by where somewhere in the world there isn't a charity event that somehow Virgin isn't somehow sponsoring or managing. He gives back in enormous ways. And he's obviously a multi-billionaire. But he came up to me and he said, oh, this is such a bother that this has happened to you. Do you happen to play chess? Now, this is the boldness test, right? The correct answer is, I haven't played chess in 40-something years. But I said, yes. Saying yes is a powerful thing. And so he waves to somebody, he says, get us a chessboard. And so we sit down and we play. And I'm playing such an unorthodox game that he can't figure out what the hell I'm doing because I'm relearning how to play the game. So he's like, you know, and people have all of these strategies that they play and you can see through them and stuff. And I, at a certain point, I say, oh, that's check. Actually, it's checkmate. And he does a double take at the board because it wasn't an obvious checkmate at all. And he says, oh, you, and he calls me a nasty name. And he immediately sets the board up to play again. Now, what happened is we started to talk because I know how to talk to famous people. Living in LA, you learn how to not be a drooling fool when you meet famous people. You just have to act like a normal person. So I wasn't interviewing him on business or trying to get him to invest in stuff like that. We were just talking politics and fun things we did and stuff. And he just really, he spent the rest of the week finding me to play chess again. And he beat me every time. And he would berate me how slowly I was making my moves every time. But I had a relationship with him. And he would say, sit across from me at dinner. There'd be 30 people. And he would say, sit across from me at dinner, because he knew I could have a regular conversation with him. And other people were saying, hey, you're monopolizing Branson. I was like, oh, I'm not going to sit across from him when he asked me to do it. I'm doing it. That was a great exercise in saying yes, in being bold, in not stopping myself. Because I just could have said, I'm going to embarrass myself. He's going to beat me in four moves. It'll be humiliating. I didn't play any of those tapes. I just said, yeah, I play chess. And, you know, that it just blossomed into what I considered an extraordinary series of interactions with the person I admire most in the world.
Very cool. I would have had to say, are you up for checkers? Because I wouldn't have been kind of lost. But well, Fred, I think that's a great place to finish it on, such a great story. And I can't thank you enough for coming on Fingerprints on Success and sharing your story of wonderful success with us. And it's been quite a journey, and we're going to be following you as your journey continues. And I recommend for everyone out there listening to grab a copy of Super Bold or download it. Absolutely terrific book. And thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah, the book is on Amazon, and it's me reading the Audible version of it. So if you want to listen to me speaking endlessly about it, that's what you get out of it. So, Bill, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Fingerprints on Success podcast. Make sure to hit subscribe on your chosen platform that you are listening to us on. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them, or post it on your social media to share with your friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links in the description of this episode. Mandelbaum Barrett PC specializes in partnering with successful business owners and proven entrepreneurs on all of their legal matters. Visit www.mblawfirm.com for more information. Once again, it's www.mblawfirm.com. We'll see you on the next episode.